This interview with Eric Thompson was recorded on February 28th, 2023, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
My name's Eric Thompson. Most of the guys in the Muslim community call me Kadeem, but either or is acceptable. You know, whichever one you remember, I'm comfortable with either one. I was referred to you guys by a friend of mine's in the Islamic community by Gregory Carpenter. You guys know him as Greg. We call him Shamsuddin. And, of course, I've done some time. You know, I've been home for about 13 years now without incident. I'm currently working in a recovery house as a house manager for recovery sober house living company called WonderWorks. And we currently manage about 14 guys in this house, and we have another house with couples in it. Four couples in that house, and I usually go between the two houses. And again, like I said, I work with youth in the Division of Correction for about 10, maybe 12 years with a program called Youth Challenge Program, which was targeted towards guys 16 to 25 years old in various topics, such as self-empowerment, time belongs to me, jobs versus careers, parenting, and our chemical dependency, and where do we go from here? So, you know, I'm glad to be on board and willing to contribute, help out in any way I possibly can, or add or take, you know, whatever I can get out of this for myself as well. You know, it's just as good for me. I'm in it just as well for myself as I am for the guys, you know, because helping them helps me. So thanks for having me, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We really appreciate you joining the call. So, I mean, we're just going to ask you about your experience, about your life experience, and you can talk about it to whatever degree of detail you'd like. And it can go whatever direction it goes. I mean, the fellows here on call, they're students, and they're, you know, interested in your experience and what you've been through and what you've learned from it. And so they're going to be leading the questioning. I'm sort of here to record and supervise.
That's fine.
Yeah. And they're just, they're ready to go. So does anybody have a question for Mr. Thompson?
Oh, I have a question. Hello, my name is Destiny, and where were you born?
Hi, Destiny. My name is Eric again. Oh. You can call me Kadeem. Okay. But please don't call me Mr. I feel old enough already as it is. I was born and raised in Baltimore City, lived here all my life. I was raised in East Baltimore in a housing project that's no longer standing. It's called Mount Pleasant Garden now, but it was used for the old Lafayette project.
Yeah.
You familiar with it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're from that part of town. I see you smiling.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I grew up there in that housing project, raised by a single parent. I had two older siblings and a younger sibling, an older brother and older sister, and I had a younger brother underneath of me. And I had a pretty basic upbringing. You know, I had a mom who insisted that I did right and did well in school and, you know, behaved the way I'm supposed to, you know, taught well manners and table manners the whole nine. But when I got old enough to make my own decisions, you know, I started doing things such as cutting school, smoking pot, and not paying attention. Okay. And that led to other things. And that kept leading to other things, and the things became worse and worse and worse and worse, and the penalties for them became worse and worse and worse. And I experienced getting locked up off and on at a young age, you know, and like anything else, you know, when we young, things roll off our backs like water in the shower when there's not a lot of consequences, you know. If anybody can think back the first time they ever did something that their parents didn't approve of, maybe got punished, some of us got, you know, what they call child abuse now, but a whooping when I was a kid. And, you know, to us, the way I was brought up, you know, after a few hours, that's over with. You know, you're right back to ripping and running, you're seeing your friends again, you get past your punishment or you're grounded or whatever the case may be. And, you know, again, I was right back out there again, being hard-headed, you know. And that led to, from maybe, say, the age of about 12 to about 17, when I first got locked up for fighting, You know, all the horror stories I heard about being locked up, you know, because none of them were the stories that I heard, and they, you know, were true. I figured, well, this is nothing. This is nothing like those guys said it was, you know. Mm-hmm. What's your little older guys in my neighborhood? You don't want to do this, you don't want to do that. And later, I'm like, man, them old guys don't know what they're talking about. So I continue to smash on the gas. Still doing mischievous stuff, cutting school, smoking pot, fighting, which turned into a little minor hanging on the corner selling a little pot, which later progressed, you know. And the short version, you know, for the sake of me not, you know, monopolizing the right time, is it led to me wind up being in and out of prison for the majority of my youth. When I say majority of my youth, I'm 55 years old, and almost two-thirds of that has been spent inside. Yeah, see, you're doing the math now. Not one-third, but two-thirds of that. So I pretty much grew up inside. I grew up in on the inside, you know, which makes it hard for me to, you know, sort of rationalize and think like my other brothers and sisters. You know, I may see something in this particular way because I grew up on the inside. They may see it another particular way because they grew up on the outside, which causes a tiff in the household. You know, I'm dug in with my heels. I see it this way. They dug in with their heels. They see it that way. You know, and it puts our parents in the middle. You know, we don't see it that way when we're coming up. You know, we just know we want our younger sisters and brothers or whatever to listen to us and do what we say do. You know, we think we're helping at the time. But now I'm old and I look back, I can see the damage that I did, me thinking the way I thought, being raised one way and then being raised the other way. They did what they were supposed to do. I was the one trying to put a square peg in a round hole. Took me almost 30 years to realize you can't do it. Same way you can't make a dime out of nine pennies. But we try anyway, don't we? You tried it, haven't you? Okay, so anything else you'd like to know?
My next question is, at what age were you convicted?
I'm sorry for interrupting. Jessica, can you move your camera a bit, like, you know, because we want to see. We want to see your, like, whole face, because I see just the half of your face.
Is that better?
A bit, yeah, just. Yeah, kind of. That's better. Yeah, thank you.
Does that help?
Yeah. Thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, right.
Okay, all right, okay. Okay, good. Question once again, the question again.
At what age specifically were you convicted?
I was first convicted of an adult charge when I was 21 years old. And I caught 5 years for a handgun. And my mom liked to beat the color off of me. And you see, I'm not that dark. You know? And it was a result of me wanting to hang out with older guys that I thought was so cool for doing just about everything under the sun. And I remember it just like yesterday. I was in the car with them, and they had a quarter pound of marijuana and a handgun. You want to know the first thing they said when the police pulled the car over?
It was you.
Shorty, you got this? And what you think I said? Yeah. The same way older guys are exploiting and using younger guys to the day. You know, they took advantage of me. I couldn't see it back then. They knew me being a minor, that the penalty wasn't going to be all that stiff for me. Wasn't a lot going to happen to me, even though I was 21 years old. I'd never been in trouble before. It was my first time. And that's exactly what happened. And I took that as a green light. Oh, this ain't so bad. It ain't not really happened. You know, I only got some probation out of it. It made me worse. You know, I got convicted for that. I got put on probation, of which I wasn't able to successfully finish. Because, like I said, the consequences weren't that great. It's like you come home from school, your mother tell you you're punished, and then 2 hours later tell you you're going outside. Did that answer that question for you?
Yes. Oh. And then my next question is, like, how did you feel when you were convicted? Like, within that moment?
At the time, when I was younger, I really didn't know what exactly was happening because I didn't really understand the penal system. All I know is I did something. I got locked up for it initially. They gave me a court date. I went to court and I got probation. And I got to report to these people and, you know, do whatever it is they asked me to do until this 5 years is up. All I know is I wasn't over jail anymore. And for me, that was a win-win. You know, it didn't mean don't do it again. It didn't mean, you know, you were lucky or you were fortunate. It just meant, like, you know what? Dang, that was enough. You know? And I came out. I kept the probation. I kept going and kept going until I did something again. And then they volleyed the probation. And then I actually went to prison. You know, and I tell you, I've never been a big guy. You know, like right now, I weigh 150, 60 pounds. You know? Back then, I was 21 years old. I looked like I was 14 years old. I wore maybe 125 pounds with rocks in my pocket. And they put me into an adult system, which I wasn't adult. I was just shy, just turning 21. And I wouldn't admit it back then, but I was scared to death. And when we're scared, what do we usually do? Behave even worse. Even worse, because we don't want people to know we're scared. And that led to me getting in trouble in prison.
Then when you went the first time, were there any experiences that you've seen that were horrific?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some of them I understood what they were right off the bat. But a lot of them I didn't really understand the significance of them until I went back the second time. And the ones that were obvious to me was homosexuality. It exists in prison. Men liking men, women liking women. And when I was coming through, it wasn't something that you had a choice in. You know, it was forced upon you back then, you know, and not in a nice, pleasant way either. You know, I can't really say it's still that way now, but we're talking for the better part of maybe about 30-something years ago. You know, it was a lot different back then, you know, and the individuals who were into that, that was their particular thing. But then you also had individuals who were trying to see the good in me and make me scared on purpose. But I wasn't smart enough to figure that out at the time, you know, and I made it through, you know, unscathed and untouched. But I can actually tell you that, you know, to this day, you know, even as me being a grown man, like, I mean, there's still things that have traumatized me from that experience. You know, even though it didn't happen to me physically, it's things that I saw that I will never be able to undo, you know, done to other people that I know very well could have easily been me had I not have known someone or someone from my neighborhood or someone who took the time out to see that even though I was there, I still was a good kid, you know, because, you know, everybody in prison is not bad. But everybody in prison is not good either, you know. So it was a traumatic experience for me, you know. But again, like I said, when we're young and we don't really pay the full cost of things, we're prone to do it again, you know.
So what was the longest stint you had ever served?
The longest stint I served was 25 years, no parole. I did 16 years and 8 months on that. I caught that at the age of 37 years old. And I thought that, you know, life as it exists was completely over for me. You know, because at that time, the average inmate was from the age of 15 to 19. So even at 37, I was a dinosaur. You know, and it was tough. Because the same way when I came through at that young age, and we felt like that we had to make a name for ourselves and that we deserve a certain amount of respect according to that quote-unquote code that we live by, you know, it caused me to get into a lot of things and experience a lot of things that it caused me a lot of hardship, pain, and suffering, you know. Some for the good, but majority of it was for the bad, you know. Because you had older guys who had been there 20, 25, 30 years. They weren't about to let a young guy like myself come in, you know, and, you know, pretty much that's their home. If he's got life and I've got 7 years or 5 years, that's his home, you know. So it really put me in some bad spots and it really made me suffered from a lot of bad things that I try now to hope that just through my experience that someone can draw some good from it to a point where they don't have to go through what I went through. You know? But, you know, the penile system has changed so much. You know, when I went through, there was a lot of physical trauma as well as mental trauma that was attached to it. But the way it's being ran now, you know, based on what kids go through in the streets, that's enough. But then when you get there, to be completely stripped down mentally, you know, a lot of young people, I don't think they're ready for that, man. You know, especially with the advent of all this modern day technology and all these modern amenities that people are used to. You know, so my advice to a lot of people is you have something in your life that you knew you absolutely, unequivocally, you cannot live with it, without it, don't go to prison. So if you know you love your laptop, you know you love your earbuds, you know you love your iPhone or you love your Zoom or whatever the case may be, and I'm just talking about modern technology, don't go to prison. You know, the other stuff is obvious. If you love your dog, your cat, your mom, your family, you know, it's clear that those things are going to be, you have to give those things up when you go anyway. But what a lot of young people aren't really ready for today is that, I guess for the lack of a better word, you know, most of them, from what I see, they live life in the fast lane, meaning the information superhighway, you know. 80, 90% of the time when you ask them to do something, most of the time there's some sort of electronic device involved, you know. And if you can't stay off electronic device for 30 minutes, just imagine when you go to prison. Along with the fact of your dignity being stripped from you, someone telling you when you go to the bathroom, when you can't go to the bathroom, when to eat, when to sleep, when not to sleep, what you can and cannot do. You know? So, you know, your independence of itself in the physical sense, man, you give that up the minute that others have been mandated to do so for you. You know? So, you know, the part that I'm speaking about, you guys probably make the same mistake I make if you ever find yourself in that position. God forbid that you do. You know, I never thought about the things, the physical things that I like. You know, I just knew that the mental stuff that I had to give up, I was going, that was obvious. But when it came down to the little stuff when I was a kid that we used to like doing, you know, I started young, man. One of the things I regret the most in life is, one, I stripped myself of a childhood. I never gave myself the opportunity to actually just be a kid. Just be a plain old, simple, ordinary kid. And what I mean by that is, about 6 weeks ago, I met a young lady, and she had a six-year-old kid. And when I finally got to meet him a few weeks later, I went in the house, and he didn't have an iPad. He didn't have a Mini. He didn't have an Xbox. He had no kind of electronic toys at all. He had plain old simple toys that I used to play with as a kid. Plastic army men, cowboys, Indians, little matchbox cars. And it kind of touched me so much to the point that I kind of teared up when I was looking at the kid, because that's something that I haven't seen in a long time. I don't see it anymore. And it made me reflect on my own childhood. Because I was hard-headed, because I didn't want to listen, because I wanted to be grown and older than what I always was. You know, I didn't have a childhood. And, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of youth out there now, I look at it like when I was 8, playing with little paper men or toy stick figures and stuff like that, and Hot Wheel racetracks and train sets, that's the equivalent of being a 20-year-old now. You know, so that's a big, there's a huge gap in between that. So when I saw this kid, man, playing with just plain ordinary toys, it took me so far back, because it was something I could identify with, but I also know that I didn't get to experience much of that. I had a small window where I experienced that, and then I took it from myself. So my advice to, you know, most young people out there now is just drop it in low gear. Take it slow. And enjoy the small, little, insignificant little things in your life. Because time goes by so fast when you're not in trouble. But even faster when you're in trouble. You know, and you look up, 20 years and went by, 25 years and went by, you know, and you really can't, you know, make heads or tails of where the time is gone, nor what have I done with my time. You know, I was doing this when I graduated. I'm still doing the same thing. You know, some people may be okay with that. But if you graduated in 1980 and now it's 2010 or 2002 and you're still doing the same thing, you have to do a little bit of self-inventory there, you know. I mean, even with myself now, you know, I'm trying to play catch up, especially with technology, you know. But I do have to come to realization with the grips of a lot of things I'm not going to get back, you know. It just got to be days of yore, you know. When I encounter them, I'm going to have to appreciate what good I can get out of them and only be able to just put it in a place that I can deal with it and manage it and move on and take the good from it and leave the bad, you know. But life is just so, so, so short. And that's coming from someone who may have a few years on some of you or may not. But the time window that I had when I was a kid, you know, and I can say when I was, say, 16, 17 years old, and I was running around acting like a fool and doing the things that I was doing, I had a little small window, you know, where when I got to be 22, 23, 24, 25, I still had an opportunity to get my ducks in a row. You know, if I wanted to have the white picket fence, have the house, have the kid, have the family, there was still an opportunity there back then. But the difference between our generation and generation now is that window's very, 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 very small now. If from the age of, say, 16 to about 25, if you haven't actually figured out what exactly you want to do, be, or accomplish, according to statistics of society, is if by the time you're 25, you haven't figured out, you're not going to get it done. You're probably going to be stuck in a remedial job, you know? So, you know, take advantage of your youth. Take advantage of it, take advantage of it, take advantage, especially the opportunities that you guys have now that I didn't have when I was coming up. We didn't have computers. We didn't have a lot of this stuff that makes things accessible to you guys that are useful for you to get a lot done. What it does, it affords you to be able to network a lot better than I did when I was younger. It gives you a much, much, much more far reach. I mean, when I was a kid, as far as I could reach was maybe from East Baltimore to West Baltimore. You guys can sit in front of a terminal, man, and reach halfway around the world now for whatever you want, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to be. You know, when you're young, man, I believe that your mind is at its peak, you know, meaning 80% of the time, whatever's put in front of it, you can accomplish it and get the good out of it you're supposed to. It's just that small percentage that gets us distracted, you know? And it may seem like a lifetime, you know? You look up, man, you may wonder where the time is gone, you know? And that's, I don't have a lot of regrets, you know? But the two that I regret the most is I took my childhood and my youth from myself, and I have a 30-year-old daughter who I left when she was 3.5 years old when I came home to a grown woman. You know? And it took quite a bit of time for her and I to get to know each other. Of course, she knew I was her dad, but I didn't know her and she didn't know me. And it was tough because underneath all of that was anger, hate, resentment, you know, along with her stuff. Those things I mentioned first was the things that I inflicted upon her, you know, indirectly. And, you know, it's wonderful now between us, you know, but it wasn't without blood, sweat, and tears. It really, really wasn't, you know. And this is why I can't stress enough to you guys, man, that time is your best friend right now. Time in youth. Time and youth. The way things are going in the world now is that if you appear to have the drive, the interest, and the desire The world is yours. It's yours. They say the world is your, they say the world is your oyster. It's your pearl. Okay. However, if you're a part of the mayhem, the mischievousness, the disrespect, the disregard, you know, society is completely, completely without any provocation, completely turning their back on you guys. Your chance is what you're doing right now. Running into people who see the good in you, who reach out to you and extend it to you. But it's not going to be easy. It's not supposed to be easy. You kind of have to do some heavy lifting. And even when you get to the point where you start seeing yourself accomplishing, 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 continue to keep doing the heavy lifting. You know, we have a saying, you know, in Islam is that everyone has to tie their camel. And the reason why we say that is because most of the time when you're in a desert, you're riding, most of the time when you're riding a camel, you're in some sort of hot climactic area that has a desert and there's not a lot of trees or any places around for you to tie your camel to it. You know, and if you don't have anything to tether it to, it'll wander around in a desert aimlessly. Aimlessly. And we know the camels have the capability of storing water in them, and they can go on and on and on and on and on and climactic weather like that for quite a while. But if you don't tie your camel, then you too will wander around aimlessly. Aimlessly. And we know there's not a resource, a lot of resources in the desert. You know? So what opportunities you see now, latch on to them with your molar teeth and hold on to them. Hold on to them. Try to get every single nutrient you could possibly get out of it, because the resources are steadily, steadily, steadily deteriorating. You know, as I speak to you guys, man, you know, I'm really pleased to be here, because one, you're the youth, man. You're the people that when I get old, I'm going to have to look to for assistance. You know, you may not see it that way. It's the same way my mom, who's 83 years old now, you know, I bought her a new iPhone, and she said, is this one of those Facebook phones that I can see you on? So, you know, she looks to me to be able to help her understand that technology. The same thing with me when I get to be her age. I'm going to have to look to you guys to educate me with that neck technology. Because my generation, I missed it, you know, and that's not for the individuals who didn't go the path that I went. I'm talking about the ones who went to college, who got the degrees, who got the jobs, who did this and did that. They still have to educate themselves with your culture, because it's so rapidly changing and progressing every day. As soon as I learn something from you guys, man, it's gone. We don't do that no more. You know, we don't do that anymore. Hold on, let me show you. It's this way now. So, you know, I look forward to being able to sit at you guys' feet and just absorb as much as I possibly can. And in return, I'm willing to impart to you guys, man, anything that I'm able to help you with, from the not so hard conversations to have to the easy conversations to have. I want you to understand with me, you know, I like people who shoot straight from the hip. If you want to know something, ask in an intelligent tone, you shall receive a favorable reply. You know, I'm a big, 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 big firm believer that don't lie to young people, because it messes them up. When you guys, it took me a really, really, really hard lesson to learn. And when you say, I'm not feeling that, I now know that when you guys say that, you really, really, really mean it in every sense of the word. And when y'all get to that place, you can't get a hammer and chisel to get that wall down. So I don't believe in lying to young people. And I especially don't believe in asking you to do something that I'm not doing myself or will do myself. You know? So, you know, I try to be an open book. And if it's something that's too raw for me to talk about, you know, I might say, well, look, me and I'll sit down later on. We'll have a one-on-one. You know, that's not something I wanted to divulge everybody, whatever, you know. But I want to ask you a question. I want you to be able to get some closure on this. So, you know, we'll do a one-on-one or whatever the case may be. But, you know, man, I just want you guys to know, man, that I'm in this just as much for myself as I am for you guys. And I hope that I get as much from you guys as you guys get from me.
Well, thank you. That's so much to think about. I know that a few other folks had some questions for you. So I'll leave them the floor.
I had a question. I guess it was like, how did you cope after you got out of prison? It must have been like very drastic change that, you know, suddenly you have this freedom. And like, what did you do with this freedom? Did you reflect? Were you sad that, you know, suddenly you realize how much time passed by? And not just thinking of time, but like the opportunities and like probably seeing other people make their family. Like, how were you able to adapt in that way, like straight coming off prison?
That's a great question.
Oh, and my name is Jasmine. Nice to meet you. I'm sorry for not introducing myself.
Your name is
My name is Jasmine. Jasmine,
that was a great question. And Jasmine, to give you the back and the front end of that, I still struggle with that. I still struggle with that to this day, you know, and I find myself reflecting a lot on what could have been. Because, like I said, I had a pretty good childhood coming up. I had a dad who owned the business for 50 years, you know, taught me to trade, taught me the business, the whole nine, when I would stay focused long enough. You know, I had a very good mom, and you're 100% right. I find myself a lot when I first got released, you know, looking at what had passed me by, especially raising my daughter, you know, and I kind of was a little critical of myself for the first couple of years, you know. One of the things that I can honestly say helped me out a great deal was my spirituality. I had to put that first, because anything that I didn't understand or anything that I lost or anything that I didn't have or was trying to get, I had to understand that as long as I trust and believe that God hasn't brought me this far, that things will be okay. That was a struggle in itself, trying to come out of prison after seeing all of this discord and coming back out here and seeing discord, but not on that level. So, yeah, it was really hard. It wasn't easy to do. You know, I had to work my butt off. Even though my dad had a business, he insisted on treating me like he treated his other employees. You know, I made minimum wage. He didn't give me no special privileges. If I came to work, he paid me. If I didn't, I didn't get paid. If I came in late, he docked me, you know. And I got to a point one time I felt like I didn't have to work for me. I went somewhere else to try it. And when I saw how people treated me in the real, real world with a criminal record, you know, being an African-American male, being stereotyped, you understand what I'm saying, you know, and still having some of those prison habits and that way of thinking, the first 5 years of getting released were horrible. Horrible. And mind you, my dad owned the business. So I didn't have to have or go through a lot of struggles like most guys coming home trying to get a job. But that's one thing, having that stereotype and trying to get a job and having a criminal history background, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's hard. After having to deal with that, the next thing I had to deal with, like you said, looking at all the opportunities that I missed. I have friends who went in the service, did a couple tours, got married, had families, had cars, had homes. I felt like crap. I felt like I was unaccomplished. You know, I didn't feel like I had a lot of self-worth. My self-esteem was in the crapper, you know. But slowly but surely, you know, I gradually had to realize that the first thing I have to do is I have to do two things that are essential: work and educate myself. Those are the two things that makes it better: work and education. The more you know, the more you grow, you know. And as I began to learn the trade that my dad was in, I was able to get better paying jobs, which made things a little bit easier, which made me a little less bitter, made me a little bit more confident, you know, gave me a little bit more drive. But to answer your question, it took me about, on the low side, about 4 or 5 years, about 8 years to actually get to a place where I was okay. Not great, but just okay. where I didn't beat myself up as much, you know, dealing with peer pressure and seeing other people accomplish. And I know I should be there. They're the same age as I am and they're doing well and stuff. But, it, you know, I hope that, you know, cleared it up for you a little bit. But it was tough. It was hard. And to this day, I still struggle with some things, some residuals of that, you know. But I have family and friends and work and stuff like that now to kind of keep me on the upside and, you know, not go down that path anymore, you know. Did that help you out?
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for
asking. It's very nice to get a perspective of this, because personally, I can't imagine being in that situation. And it's very nice to have like this one-on-one perspective, unique perspective. And I think it was very good for also reference to kind of remember how a perspective shift in these types of situations is how one copes with it differently.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about that, because, you know, stress affects us all in different ways. You know, it's no cookie cutter. It's never identically the same, you know, because we all have different experiences and we're at different stages in our life at different times and different ages. And that's not to mention that we have outside emphases like family, friends, you know, things like that that play a role on that, you know, especially nowadays now, because, you know, culture has changed so much, you know, and it always makes me reflect back to Martin Luther King said that absolute right and wrong has become what the masses of the people happen to be doing at that particular time. You know, I mean, it's going to become so commonplace to the point that, you know, doing right and wrong is going to seem like it's just normal. You know, it's not going to be anything to distinguish it anymore. You know, whatever happened to be that the people doing that particular time, and that's what the majority of the people are probably going to do, right or wrong. You know, is it beneficial to you? Not really. You know, I've been there. Follow behind the crowd, do what the crowd's doing, dress like the crowd dress, act the way the crowd acts. And then when it really gets down to the skinny of it, they go off and do whatever it is they do. Some of them went to well-to-do families and some of them didn't. But me, I didn't come from much. You know, so when all that was away, the reality was set in, and then that's when I really realized that my situation was a dying situation, you know, and I had to change it.
I have a question for you. How did you get out of prison early?
Now, I got out early? I didn't. I did all my time and got released. The last time I got incarcerated at 37 years old, I did all the time. I did it all. It was a non-parolable sentence. See, that's what usually happens. You get in trouble one time, you get a smack on the wrist. You get in trouble a second time, you get a harder smack on the wrist. You get in trouble a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh time, then they figure, okay, we're going to put you somewhere and let you lay down for a little while, and maybe, just maybe, you'll get it. So what happened was I started off with the little ones, and then I wound up getting the one big one. And I came home an old man. And I did every single day. They gave me what was called a non-parolable sentence, meaning I could have been the best behaved individual in the system, but I still had to do every day of my time. So they do have incentives where you can follow the rules and you probably say you're doing 5 years, get out in two, you know, but you have to do programs, you have to do self-help, stuff like that, you know. Does that help you out a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. Did anybody else have a question just off of that statement? A couple of folks we haven't heard from tonight. So what was it about this last sentence that you said, all right, this is it, I've got to make the change?
The last one did it for me was, and it's really, 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 man, I'm glad you asked that question, man, because that's what brings me full circle to where I'm at now. My last sentence, I was about 10 years into a 25 no parole sentence. And one of my friend's son came into jail, 18 years old with 50 years. Broke my heart. broke my heart. I used to change this kid's diapers. You know, I sat down and took a hard look at the fact that I may not have put the gun in his hand, but I also didn't do anything to deter him from doing what he did. It's as if though I would have put a loaded gun in his hand and told him to play Russian roulette with it. Because I watched when he was coming up, and I never said, hey, man, don't do that. That's not right. You shouldn't do that. Go in the house. Get off the steps. Get off the corner. Instead, I progressed in my bad behavior, not paying attention that he was like a sponge soaking it up. Just soaking it up. Me and his dad ripping and running around, doing stuff, being bad, selling drugs, carrying guns, disrespecting older folks, not really caring about the neighborhood. And when he walked through that door, man, the unfortunate part about it is that he got 50 years for a murder that he didn't do. That's what made it so hard for me, you know, because you know how the streets are. You know, people say the streets talk, you know, and he really didn't do it. Someone shot through the door of a house and the person behind it got hit. When it was all over with, he was the person that got blamed for it, you know. And he was 18 years old. Well, for a fresh 50 years, he only had 6 months in on it. And I know at my age, I came in at 37 with 25. I didn't know where to start. And I consider myself to be a seasoned guy from out the streets, you know. But I didn't have a clue where to start with that kind of time, you know. And when he came through the door, I said to myself, I said, man, this is not acceptable. We can no longer keep having this happening. These kids are getting snuffed out before they even get an opportunity to even think about what they want to do in life. And from that point on, I made a commitment to myself that I would do whatever I could to help young people, even if it was just being a good example. If I couldn't do it physically, I would do it indirectly or whatever way I could, but I would make sure I would be a good example for kids from that point on. And I got involved in a program called the Youth Challenge Program at MCTC, Maryland Correctional Training Center. And it ran for about 16, 17 years. I did it for about 12 years. And then I moved on, you know, I was getting short, I moved on. But you have no idea, man, how fulfilling it is to run into some of those guys now and see them, and they're married, they got kids, you know. And of course, you're going to have your small percentage that fall through the cracks, you know. But if it weren't for me running into these guys after I got out, man, I don't think I would be where I'm at now, you know. And I credit a lot of it to the fact that I promised myself I would never ask a young person to do something that I'm not doing myself and they can't see me doing it. You know, I think when it comes to youth and you're trying to encourage them to do what's right and get on the gravy train, man, you have to be a preacher. You have to be what you preach, you know. And if you're not in it for that reason, man, then, you know, because once you lose them, man, it's so hard to get them back. When you do something to a young person, man, they thought, am I failing that? Because you told me to do something, they saw you doing otherwise. Well, man, it's so hard to try to get them back, man. It's nearly impossible. So, you know, I'm a big advocate for calling to a point in the way, man, and being an example for them, you know. And if I'm sitting in class taking a computer class, they sitting in class taking a computer class, I'm struggling, I'm right there beside them. If I got to take it twice because I didn't get the first time there, I got to swallow it up, go back, and take it again. You know? But that's what changed it for me, seeing him and feeling like I was just as much responsible for him being there as he was. You know? And that was almost 30 years now, man. You know? And from that point on, you know, I've been involved in some sort of program, you know, with respect to trying to encourage young people to do what's right. You know.
Did you ever get a chance to speak with him?
Say that again.
Did you ever get a chance to speak with him?
Yeah. Like I said, throughout, you know, moving through the city in the last, I'd say in the last 13 years since I've been home, I've ran into maybe about a dozen of them. But mind you, we had graduating classes. We had three graduations a year. We did it for about 14 years. And each time we would graduate about 120 guys throughout the whole, you know, prison complex of a population of 3,000. So you know, it's been quite a few of them that I've ran into since I've been home, man, that are really, really doing good. Of course, you're going to have those who fall through the crack, you know, but those numbers are much, much lower than the numbers of those that went on to do well, man, you know. And sometimes, you know, even though it breaks your heart to see the ones that don't succeed, but you can't let that be a deterrent. You know, if at first you don't succeed, then try again, you know. But one of the things I love about the two generations underneath of me, when I say that, I mean, I have a younger brother that's 49, and then I have nephews that are in their early 20s. So I say two generations under me is, you know, man, it's like 80, 90% of the time, whatever they touch and put their hands on, man, it's not even a struggle for them. They excel in it. They excel in it. But what happens is there's so much happening in the world now, you know, that distracts them. It doesn't hold their attention. See, that's what we were afforded when I was coming up. We didn't have a lot of distractions. We didn't have a lot of modern day technology. We had maybe an Atari, a ColecoVision, or Sega Genesis or something like that. We just didn't have a lot of technology that distracted us like young people have today, you know. And I'm not saying don't. Tiffany?
Man, I'm touching my stuff!
I'm not saying don't get involved and excel in technology. What I'm saying is don't let it consume you. Have a nice, equal balance, you know. To the point where if anything ever happens to technology, you still can strive and excel at that same rate and that same pace. Okay?
Thank you. That's really brilliant. Does anybody have, I think we got time for one more question here. Does anybody want to finish it out for us? Anybody have something they're burning to ask?
Can I ask something?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, my name is Sabi. I'm a TA here. As long as our fellows have no questions, can you tell us about a little bit about your time in prison? I mean, maybe something I don't know terrible what happened there. Something that you learned there.
I will. I believe that you can't always put the sunshine on things without the rain. You know, so I'll give you guys, for the sake of time, I'll try to give you as much of the clear noise as you can. I've never been a big guy, you know, and I've never looked my age. I've always looked younger than what I am. I've always looked younger than my age. Like right now, I'm 55. Most people think I'm in my 30s. So imagine when I was 18, 19 years old, 21, 21 years old, going to the penal system, looking like I was 14 years old, you know. You go in, most people think you want to hit the weights, you want to bulk up, you want to get big, you know. And I had an experience where a guy was like, yeah, you know, you can cut up real fast. I'm going to help you out. Just come on out a couple of days a week, and we're going to get you together and get you a good routine. I'm pumped. I'm jazzed. And it's, oh, God, don't help me out. You're going to look out for me, man. And it went on for a couple of weeks, only to find out he was more interested in my hind parts than he was me, you know. And had it not been for some older guys who realized that even though I thought I was a little slick, street savvy little kid, I really didn't know what was about to happen. They stopped it before it did. You know, had they not have, that would be another traumatic thing that I would never forget while I'm in prison, even though I won't ever forget that because I know how close I came to being a victim. You know, same way later on in the years after I learned myself about that. See, there's always something going to pop up in life. You have to constantly keep yourself on the ball and educate yourself. After that, you know, it come, oh, what size are those shoes right there? I think I can fit those. Let me try one on. Only enough for the guy not to give you my shoe back. Can you imagine having to pick up a knife and go take back what belonged to you from someone else? Because if you don't, you might as well go ahead and get the rest of your stuff and set it in front of the door because the rest of them coming to get it too. So that's something, shut the door. Now you come in, RJ, just shut the door. That's something that you know, you really don't want to put yourself in as an individual. If you're not a confrontational person, if you're not the type of person who likes confrontation, and that doesn't say that you're not tough, you know, because I don't like confrontation. You know, but if I find myself in that situation, it's like they say, you corner rattle, rattle fight you, you know. And then after that incident, you know, you got a plethora of other incidents coming behind it. You know, same thing going on the streets you have in prison. You have the drugs, you have the robbery, you have the rape, you have the murder, you have the mayhem, you know. And I've experienced just about a facet of it all at a young age, and some of it in my older age. And it's just that when I got older, I had developed a genuine distaste for things that I know I used to be a part of. You know, after I saw the good in you young people, man, I realized I no longer wanted to be a part of exploiting you guys, man. I became a number one advocate for young guys. If I saw a guy trying to do what was done to me, listen, don't do what you get ready to do. I know what you're trying to do. It's not right. Leave the kid alone, you know? And, you know, it's sad because most of the time, most people, when you don't know a thing at a young age, you just don't know, you know? But most of the times we wind up paying through the nose to find out, you know? And I believe those days are gone. Young people don't have to experience those things. It can be cut off at the source before it happens now, because we're too advanced of a society. We have too much going on for us now. Young people no longer have to suffer the way I did coming up, you know? And I think it's important that if you call yourself a stand-up guy or a stand-up woman, and you see an injustice or you see a thing that's wrong, man, and you don't say anything, I think you're worse than the person who perpetrates the act. Because sometimes all it takes is a simple 2-minute conversation to avert things. And that doesn't mean that something has to happen or blows have to be thrown or curse words have to be thrown around. Just simple words like, hey, I see what you're doing, man. I don't think you should do that. It's not right. And I don't think I can sit by and watch you do that. I'm not threatening you. I'm not saying anything, but I know me being the person I am, I can't sit by and watch you do that. It's not right. And that's it. You know, but I've experienced being robbed. I've experienced being stabbed. I've experienced having to be on the other end of that. You know, because same way society tell kids in the streets, if you don't do this, these guys gonna do that to you, man, or such and such and such. You know, and it sucks because I always say that young people today only have one of three choices. And I want all you guys to listen to me. Because I know if not you yourself, someone you know or someone who knows someone you know is in this situation. You have one of three choices. Sell these drugs. Join this gang. Or take this butt whooping. Those are the choices that you guys have been relegated to when you're out in the streets nowadays. No one dares to be different anymore. It's okay to be different. In fact, I encourage you to be different. You know, you're going to be called names. You're going to be really treated with. No one dares to be different. If everyone's walking around the same and doing the same, then what do you have to look forward to when you get up in the morning? Those three choices are: join my gang, take this tail whooping, or sell my drugs. You guys don't have to settle for those three things, man. Life is so much more. It has so much more to offer, man. You know, and you're going to have guys out there with old silver tongue and make you think, well, you know, I don't need, how they gonna eat tonight, man? We ain't hold this for me right here. I'll give you some money. It's gonna sound good. It's gonna look good. It might even feel good at the moment. But trust me, it's gonna pass like everything else. Easy come, easy go. Please put the work in. Put the work in. Be willing to suffer for what is important to you and what you believe in and what you firmly, 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 firmly believe that you can accomplish. Just be willing to suffer for it, and trust me, you'll have everything that you strive for. I didn't say everything you want, everything that you strive for and put the work in for. And I'm still finding that out at 50-something years old. If you do the heavy lifting and you're sincere, you don't take shortcuts, you don't take corners, you don't try to be 50 Cent slick, you don't try to get over, you don't try to be underhanded, no three-card Molly. As long as you're true to it, you'll get exactly out of it what you're supposed to. And it took me until I was I didn't grow up and become a grown man until I was 47, 48 years old. So do the math. I'm 55. I haven't been grown that long. Just to give you an idea how much work you got to do. It's not hard work. You just have to do the work, though. So I'm glad of the man I am now. I'm glad that you guys are even taking the time out to loan me a portion of your time to listen to me. You know, for me, that's a win-win. Even if I never meet or speak to any of y'all ever again, you've given me enough to put in my tank, to refuel me and keep me going to the next leg. I hope I've done the same for you, and I look forward to seeing and hearing from you guys again, because I'm an all-in type of guy, man, in for a penny, in for a pound. And I feel like I've kind of somewhat met you guys. I look forward now to try to having a relationship with you now. You know, and I hope that it's vice versa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you guys.